Amateur Radio Newsline, report number 1875, with a release date of July 19, 2013. To follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. Researchers say that this solar cycle will likely remain poor, and cycle 25 could be worse. The 2013 National Scouting Jamboree takes to the air and the web from Mount Hope, West Virginia. ARRL CEO K1ZZ writes about spectrum pressure in the August QST magazine. A new beacon in Perth, Australia, trying to prove a path to Africa exists on 2 meters. And a look at radio in Nepal, where FM reigns supreme. All this and more on Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1875, coming your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now, here is Jim Davis, W2JKD.
While the sun is currently at the projected peak of its 11-year solar cycle, our home star has been relatively quiet in the area of sunspots and their effect on radio propagation here on planet Earth. Amateur Radio Newsline's Norm Seeley, KI7UP, takes a look at what scientists believe is happening.
Researchers say that this year's solar maximum is shaping up to be the weakest in some 100 years, and the next one could be even quieter. This according to scientists who study the solar cycle as it affects our home planet. One of these is David Hathaway of NASA's Marshall Space Flight Center in Huntsville, Alabama. In an early July teleconference, Hathaway told reporters that we are witnessing the smallest solar maximum we have seen in the space age. Also, that the next one, cycle 25, could be even quieter. About every 11 years, the sun goes through a cycle defined by an increase and then decreasing number of sunspots. The current cycle, known as Solar Cycle 24, has been underway since 2011. Its peak was expected in 2013, but there have been fewer sunspots observed this year compared with the maximums of the last several cycles. Sunspots are the dark temporary regions on the surface of our home star that are thought to be caused by interaction between the sun's plasma and its magnetic field. They are also sources of solar flares and coronal mass ejections that in turn send charged particles into space. Those that hit Earth hold the potential of causing damage to satellites and producing surges in power grids. But they also affect radio propagation by causing short-term, high-frequency blackouts, while at the same time producing some dazzling auroras above the planet's poles that radio amateurs and others have long used for propagation experimentation. Ham radio operators on 6 meters and above have been known to make some amazing DX contacts by bouncing signals off aurora trails. Giuliana Di Toma, a scientist at the High Altitude Observatory in Colorado, says that the sunspots occurring during a calm maximum have the same brightness and area as ones observed during a more turbulent peak. The only difference is that there are fewer of them, and that's why low cycles, like this one, are considered as being weak. Scientists seem to agree that small cycle 24 also fits into a 100-year pattern of building and waning solar cycles. They say that they don't know yet the exact cause of this trend, but they note that there are weak solar cycles in the beginning of the 19th and 20th centuries, as well as now in the 21st. For ham radio, this means that while the various bands are far from dead, that their full potential may not come about during the solar cycle. For Amateur Radio Newsline, Norm Seeley, KI7UP, where the sun is keeping a rather warm Scottsdale, Arizona.
You can find out more about the solar cycle at tinyurl.com/week-cycle-24 and tinyurl.com/not-many-sunspots to mention only two. Weak sunspots or not, one group having a lot of fun with ham radio this week is the Boy Scouts of America, who are holding their 2013 National Scout Jamboree from July 15th through the 25th. Amateur Radio Newsline's Bruce Tennant, K6PZW, has the details.
Approximately 40,000 scouts have converged on Mount Hope, West Virginia for this year's National Scout Jamboree, being held at the nearby Summit Bechtel Reserve. While there are a lot of high-impact events for scouts to participate in this year's Jamboree, the K2BSA ham radio station enjoys a high-profile location nestled in between the AT&T Summit Station, Summit Center, and landing pad for one of the many zipline adventures. The purpose of K2BSA is to introduce the science, technology, and fun of amateur radio to scouts and scout leaders. It's also there to help scouts earn their radio merit badges and to serve as the amateur radio voice of the Jamboree via two-way radio contacts worldwide.
We have some updates on K2BSA operations. Today, we have completed 25 radio merit badges. 25 scouts have completed radio merit badge. We've had 41 scouts go through the amateur radio direction finding program. We've given 418 scout demos and completed over 462 those.
With equipment furnished by ICOM America, this year's K2BSA station is providing scouts with a very wide-ranging exposure to amateur radio. Mentors are on hand to explain what it is, how it's relevant to them, and providing them an opportunity to try as many aspects of the hobby as possible. It will also be providing demonstrations to at least 4,000 Jamboree participants. This includes stations operating high frequency, SSB, and PSK31, as well as VHF and UHF FM. Hidden transmitter hunting classes will be available, and on-site amateur license testing will be offered as needed. APRS will be active, and K2BSA will be on the air with CW as time permits. Even if you're not able to attend the 2013 Scouting Jamboree, you can still help support the event with a contact or two. K2BSA will be on the air throughout the event, operating SSB and PSK31 on 75 through 10 meters. They also have an EchoLink demonstration station on node 4566, signing K2BSA-R, and D-Star contacts are available via the WV8BSA repeater and reflector 033A. This means that hams anywhere with or without the best of propagation can tune in. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Bruce Tennant, K6PZW in Los Angeles.
Other activities include high-altitude ham radio carrying balloon launches on July the 18th, 20th, and the 23rd. Also, an International Space Station contact has also been scheduled. All in all, a full 10 days of fun for scouts and the Jamboree and for the ham radio community that's supporting it with contacts worldwide. Amateur radio has been granted an exemption from the new West Virginia law that bans most distractions while operating a motor vehicle in that state. The new distracted driving law took effect on Monday, July the 1st. Under its terms, it's no longer legal to text and or drive, nor use a cellular telephone that's not operated hands-free. But amateur radio operators are still allowed to operate their two-way radio gear while behind the wheel, as long as they're properly licensed by the FCC. Also for ham radio operators, portable radio devices such as handhelds are not considered distracted driving implements under the new law. Emergency officials like police, fire, and emergency management services are also exempt and will continue to be allowed to use radios while driving. With you 52 weeks a year, every year, we are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the W0EF repeater serving Minneapolis, Minnesota. Spectrum Pressure is the title of an editorial appearing in the August issue of QST Magazine, one that details the reasons that ham radio must remain vigilant as pressure grows to make more spectrum available to other services. The article was penned by ARRL Chief Executive Officer David Sumner, K1ZZ. In it, Dave talks about last June's presidential memorandum representing the next stage in making more spectrum available for commercial wireless broadband. It also covers the implications that this has for the current users of the bands, from 400 megahertz through 6 gigahertz, including radio amateurs. Now, unlike other articles and news stories that we've seen on this topic, this is not a piece meant to convince the reader that the sky is falling. Rather, it's an honest and very easy to understand look at the needs of wireless communications in the years that lie ahead. This in itself makes it a must for every ham, regardless of personal interest, to read and share through discussions at club meetings and elsewhere. Dave Sumner's article is on page 9 of the August issue of QST. If you have the magazine but have not yet taken the time to read it, we suggest that you make doing so a priority. As many scholars say, knowledge and understanding are always the first line of defense. Another attempt in Congress to modernize the operation of the FCC is taking place on Capitol Hill. Jeff Clark, KAJAC, has the details.
Oregon Representative Greg Walden, W7EQI, is once again looking at ways to streamline the operation of the FCC. Slated for last Thursday, July 11, the chairman of the House Commerce Subcommittee on Communications and Technology was to have members review drafts similar to bills passed by the House of Representatives last Congress to streamline the FCC's reporting obligations and hasten the agency's decision-making process while reducing regulatory burdens on the companies it regulates. In 2012, the Republican-controlled House approved the FCC Process Reform Act and the FCC Consolidated Reporting Act. Taken together, the bills would consolidate the number of reports the agency needs to submit to lawmakers each year on the industries it regulates, as well as establish more shot clocks for proceedings and publishing the full text of a rule for public comment before a commission vote. The effort went nowhere in the Democratic-controlled Senate. I'm Jeff Clark, KHJAC.
Reports coming out of the hearings say that Democrats and Republicans remain at odds over numerous points, and as of this moment, there appears to be very little room for compromise. The FCC has granted a request from College Broadcasters, Inc., asking that a reply to a comment deadline on General Docket Number 13-86, the FCC, be pushed for 15 days. This rulemaking procedure is the latest inquiry into the subject of broadcast indecency. It turned out that by the commentary cutoff date, over 100,000 comments had been filed, and the petitioner claimed more time was needed to evaluate the material. As such, the deadline for reply comments has been pushed back from July the 18th to August the 2nd. The FCC has denied several petitions asking that its rules regarding the installation of Common Alerting Protocol, or CAP gear, be installed by a number of broadcasters and cable delivery services. The petitioners had sought the delay on the basis that they could not meet the original June 30, 2012 deadline due to vendor delays. Section 11.56 requires that emergency alert system participants have installed operational equipment that can receive and process EAS alerts in the Common Alerting Protocol by June 30, 2012. In its report and order, the FCC simply stated that it found that the petitioners failed to show special circumstances to justify departure from this requirement of the Commission's rules, and that it's not in the public interest to grant such a waiver. The Common Alerting Protocol is an XML-based data format for exchanging public warnings and emergencies between alerting technologies. It allows a warning message to be consistently disseminated simultaneously over many warning systems to many applications. And as such, it's said to increase warning effectiveness and simplify the task of activating a warning for those with the authority to do so. The Western Electric name has been resurrected for a new vacuum tube manufacturing venture here in the United States. With its headquarters in Rossville, Georgia, operation will make vacuum tubes mainly for use in high-end audio components. While tubes, or valves as they're known in Europe, were once the mainstay of the world's electronics, they were eventually supplanted by transistors and integrated circuits. Soon afterwards, most United States-based manufacturers deserted the manufacture of tubes and followed the solid-state trend. In recent years, vacuum tube manufacturing has become the domain of specialty companies, mainly in Russia and China. But even they only manufacture the most popular tubes, like the venerable 12AX7 and the 6L6.
These are used in high-end specialty audiophile gear and portable amplifiers preferred by some musicians. The new incarnation of Western Electric is headed by Charles G. Whitener, Jr. Initially, it'll sell only a handful of different tube types that are exact reproductions of Western Electric's classics, such as the 300B. The latter was a power triode audio output tube that was originally designed to be used in movie theater sound installations. You can read the entire story of the return of Western Electric tube manufacturing on the web at tinyurl.com/western-electric-lives. Maine's Kennebec Journal reports Ron Cote, N1SVC, and John Guimond have developed a unit that could eventually help prevent aircraft accidents at small and regional airports. The newspaper says that GARD, which stands for General Audio Recording Device, was created and developed by Guimond's business partner, Ron Cote, of West Gardner, through their new commercial venture, Invisible Intelligence, LLC. The device's purpose is to assist in the investigation of crashes by providing a recording of all radio traffic at smaller general aviation airports without control towers. Now, those are airfields where currently no mechanism for recording exists. More about this device and how it was developed is on the web at tinyurl.com/small-airport-safety. On the Ham Radio Social Calendar, the 2013 Central States VHF Society Conference takes place the weekend of July the 26th through July 28th. The venue is the Elk Grove Village Holiday Inn, located in Elk Grove Village, Illinois. Activities begin on Friday morning, the 26th at 9 a.m., with antenna range gain measurements and preamp noise figure measurement contests. Technical programs will be held Friday afternoon and all day Saturday. Full information, including a detailed agenda, can be found at tinyurl.com/central-states-VHF. Nobel laureate Joe Taylor, K1JT, will be the featured banquet speaker at the 61st Annual W9DXCC Convention and Banquet. This event is slated for Saturday, September 21st at the Holiday Inn, Elk Grove Village, Illinois, and will also host presentations by such prominent names as Eric Hall, K9GY, on his Afghanistan operations, Carl Lutzelschwab, K9LA, who will discuss solar cycle 24 propagation, and many more. The W9DXCC is an annual event sponsored by the Northern Illinois DX Association and has become a mainstay for DX operators throughout the Midwest. More is online at www.w9dxcc.com. Japan's Amateur Radio Festival, also known as the JARL Ham Fair, will be held at the Tokyo Big Sight Exposition Center on August the 24th and the 25th. Billed as one of the world's largest and most impressive amateur radio gatherings, the event features displays by industry and radio clubs, internationally known guest speakers, and many other activities to satisfy the needs of the Pacific Rim amateur radio community. In addition, the Region 3 directors of the International Amateur Radio Union will be meeting on Monday and Tuesday following the Ham Fair. They plan to discuss and act on items relevant to Region 3 as it is now and in the future. More is on the web now, www.jarl.or.jp. This is Ham Radio News for today's radio amateur. This is the Amateur Radio Newsline with links to the world from our only official website at www.arnewsline.org. and being relayed by the volunteer services of the following radio amateur. The ARRL in Southgate News reports that the High Frequency Active Auroral, or HAARP, research facility program has been shuttered due to a lack of funding. Amateur Radio Newsline's Stephen Kinford, N8WB, reports.
According to the ARRL, its information is from HAARP Program Manager Dr. James Keeney at Kirtland Air Force Base in New Mexico. He says that the 35-acre ionospheric research facility in Gakona, Alaska, has been shuttered since early May. He said no one is on site, access roads are blocked, buildings are chained, and the power turned off. Also that HAARP's website through the University of Alaska no longer is available. According to Dr. Keeney, HARP had put out a notice 2 years ago that it would be shutting down. It also did not submit a budget request for the 2015 fiscal year. But, says Dr. Keeney, no one paid any attention until the shutdown occurred. Since it did, people are complaining, noting that he's already had inquiries from Congress and from universities that depended upon HARP research grants. The in-depth ARRL story says that the Air Force has taken possession of the HARP facility for now, but if no other agency steps forward to take over its operation, that this unique facility will be dismantled. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Stephen Kinford, NAWB, in Wadsworth, Ohio.
You can read the ARRL story at tinyurl.com/harp-shuttered. A new 2-meter special service beacon on 144.950 MHz is being established in Perth, Western Australia. This by the Northern Corridor Radio Group in an attempt to prove that a Perth to South African path actually exists. The beacon call will be VK6RIO. The beacon will run 100 watts into 4 8-element Yagis directed towards South Africa. It'll use digital chirp modulation, which can be detected some 50 decibels below the noise floor with a 2 kilohertz bandwidth. With the processing gain from using chirp modulation, the effective radiated power is close to 100 megawatts. Anyone interested in more details regarding the new beacon should contact Keith Bainbridge at VK6RK via wia.org.au. A software-defined radio costing only $40 is the subject of an IEEE article that describes how, with some cheap hardware and free software, you can listen in on digital and analog signals across a wide range of the radio spectrum. The author is Stephen Kess, KB1WNR, who used a Freeview P250 dongle, an indoor TV antenna, and a Model B Raspberry Pi computer to make it all happen. You can read the entire article and watch a video of the device online, tinyurl.com/inexpensive-SDR. Prepare for a wave of astronomical revelations with the $51 million Murchison Wide Field Array, or MWA, radio telescope in Western Australia now in full operation. WIA newsman Graham Kemp, VK4BB, has the details.
The MWA is part of the growing Murchison Radio Astronomy Observatory in a remote part of the West Australia region where radio frequency interference is virtually non-existent. It's a precursor to the $2 billion International Square Kilometre Array project and comprises some 2,048 antennas that capture low-frequency radio waves. It'll step up observations of the sun to detect and monitor massive solar storms and will also investigate a unique concept, seeing if stray FM radio signals can be used to track dangerous space debris. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Graham Kemp, VK4BB of WIA News, reporting from Brisbane, Australia.
Once both of these new radio astronomy tools are in day-to-day use, man's knowledge of the final frontier of space will be greatly enhanced. On the air, PA0FA will be operating special event station PA1813A through August the 13th while celebrating the twice-liberated city Arnhem, Holland. Arnhem is a city and municipality located in the eastern section of that nation. It's well known that Arnhem was freed back at the end of World War II in 1945, but it was liberated once before in 1813 from the French, hence the call PA1813-Alpha for this operation, which will be mostly CW using some single sideband and digital modes. The latter two modes will depend on the availability of time and other possibilities. You can QSL to PA0FAW either direct or via the EQSL. In DX, CT2HPM will be on the air from Angola as D2CT until July the 26th. Activity will be on 20 through 10 meters, mostly using PSK31 and RIDI, QSL via his home call sign. ON4LO will be active stroke DL, stroke P from Femarn Island until July the 25th. His operation is reported to be holiday style on the HF bands. QSL via his home call sign, direct, or by the Bureau. PY2DY will be active as SY8APQ from Lesvos Island until July the 31st. His operations are on 20 and 15 meters, but no modes or times on the air are specified. QSL via PY2DY, either direct or electronically, using Logbook of the World. Sorry, but this station will not accept cards via the Bureau or EQSL. DL5KUD will be active from Rugern Island during the RSGB Islands on-air contest. That takes place July the 27th through the 28th. He'll be on as a single operator CW-only low-power entry, QSL via DL5KUD. And finally this week, Nepal, which years ago modernized its broadcast radio in a way that the isolated nation is now a place where FM radio is king, is facing new challenges from the Internet. Amateur Radio Newsline's Cheryl Lasik, K9BIK, tells us why.
A recent Radio World story quotes Santosh Devkota, who says that when it comes to the penetration of FM radio stations, Nepal is one of the most successful broadcasters in the world. Devkota is managing director of Digimed. This is an FM radio consultancy and training firm located in Kathmandu. He says that to date, over 300 FM stations are on air, with 435 licenses having been issued so far. One of the most thriving stations is Radio Kantapur on 96.1 FM, which received its license in October 1998. The station is part of the Kantapur Media Group, which also operates a national TV network, newspapers, and websites. Radio Kantapur has its central station, located in Polchok, Lalitpur, with seven relay operations outside Kathmandu Valley and major cities all over that nation. Radio Kantapur is what Nepal calls a front-rank radio stations group, but there are hundreds of smaller stations, with far less in the way of resources. These are operating either as commercial or community broadcasters. Devkota says that the result is that the number of FM stations has grown faster than the nation's economy's ability to support them. And now there are new challenges. Television is starting to cut into Nepal's radio listening audience. So is streaming media via the Internet. In this latter, the growing popularity of broadband Internet at home and via smartphones is fueling the growth of homegrown online radio stations, similar to those in the West. Devkota says that at the end of March 2012, there were already about 250 Nepalese online radio stations. That is approximately 150 more than could be found back in 2009 and 2010. An amazing growth rate, to say the least. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Cheryl Lasek, K9BIK, in Zion, Illinois.
Nepal's population is just under 30 million, who live in an area slightly larger than the state of Arkansas. Despite its reputation as a Himalayan refuge, only the northern part of Nepal is mountainous. As you move south into the areas of rivers that feed the Ganges, the mountains give way to hills, and then the flat plain, where its economy is based mainly on agriculture. Only about a fifth of its population lives in urban areas. You can read this very interesting article about radio and the emerging nation's broadcasting prospects online at tinyurl.com/Nepal-radio-future. With thanks to Allen Labs, AMSAT, the ARRL, the CGC Communicator, CQ Magazine, the FCC, the Ohio Penn DX Bulletin, Radio Netherlands, RAIN, the RSGB, the Southgate News, Twit TV, and Australia's WIA News. That's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. Our email address is newsline@newsline.org. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website, located at www.arnewsline.org. You can also write to us or support us at Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robina Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. For now, with Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, at the editor's desk, I'm Jim Davis, W2JKD, on Florida's Treasure Coast, saying 73, and we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2013, all rights are reserved.